I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, cue the crocodile tears. Democrats painting a sad, scary story about what could happen if they aren't allowed to raise taxes. Plus, Democrat Secretary of State Steve Hobbs stands up to his own party and stands for common sense. And we'll dive into Wisconsin's woke word soup. Is it even worse than Washington State's? That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandy Cruz. A little housekeeping to start the show with today. Tomorrow will be our last live show of the week. It is Tuesday, right? Yeah. Tomorrow, Wednesday, will be our last live show of the week. I am in Boston on Thursday, so you'll have a short week. We'll still have our regular other shows. Doge Watch dropping tonight. New episode of Politics Unpacked will drop Thursday. And a new episode of Sundays with Subscribers on Sunday. All right. Can you tell that's fake? Fake tears?
A little bit.
Really? God, I thought that was good.
Well, that was kind of a rants move there.
Call me Washington Democrats, because I'm just crocodile tears galore. And like me, their crocodile tears are very, 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 very obvious. So at this point in the legislative session in Olympia, work is going to begin, we hope, in earnest on trying to figure out the state's budget situation. As you know, and as we have known since, curiously, the day after the November election, we are in quite the budgetary situation. We have a $14 billion-ish dollar budget deficit that, again, just weirdly, no one told us about until the day after the November election and the day after Washingtonians decided to hand Democrats all of the major races, because apparently putting the same party in control of state government yet again after years and years of failure is just the best that we can do. So we know, you know, up to this point in the legislative session, we've been talking about some bad bills and policy issues, which we'll continue to discuss. But sort of looming over all of it is, what are they going to do to deal with the budget? Is it going to be all cuts? One could hope. Is it going to be a mixture of increased revenue, so new taxes, increased taxes, and cuts? Or are they just going to go full stupid and increase taxes to cover everything and also increase spending in the process? I know what they want to do. I don't know if they're going to be allowed to do it. But yesterday, the House Democratic Caucus put out this sob story. You know it. I don't even have to tell you. You know exactly how this is going to go, right? Oh my gosh. If we can't raise your taxes, we're doomed. We are absolutely doomed. And all the critical things, life and death, healthcare, education, public safety, we're going to have to cut all of it and everything's going to be horrible. So that's what they did. They put out this new website. What does a no revenue budget mean? So in this, they're looking at the worst case scenario. What if we can't have any new revenue? What if we can't increase taxes and we have to resort to $14 billion in cuts, in budget cuts? You just read this. And first of all, there is such a lack of accountability. There is zero accountability, zero, not an ounce of it, not a whisper of it. It says catastrophic cuts to services that save lives. Here's the thing that really gets me. They say, due to increasing needs, rising inflation, and slowing revenue growth, Washington State is facing a budget deficit. Let me read that again, because I swear I missed something there. Due to increasing needs, rising inflation, and slowing revenue growth, Washington State is facing a budget deficit. Are those the only three reasons? Gosh, that's weird, because I could swear that spending more money than you should have, out of control spending increases, massive increases in the size and scale of government, none of that. Again, no accountability. No desire to take accountability. It says Washington's tax structure requires more spending by low and middle income residents, and the wealth gap growing. Oh, there it is. The wealth gap growing between billionaires and regular working families. We're all falling behind. So they've set it up for what it's going to be. oh my gosh, we will have to make these massive cuts to really important things that save lives if we don't increase taxes. So they're spinning the sob story, and they pulled out these things that they might have to cut. Worst case scenario, healthcare, human services and early learning, higher education, helping, oh, here it is, the Trump card, helping people with disabilities. Do you want to cut money from people with disabilities? I'm surprised there's not a line item for childhood cancer, kill puppies, behavioral health, corrections, as if they ever care at all about public safety. But when, of course, there's a budget crisis, they know people care about public safety. So they dangle it over your head and say, we'll have to make cuts to public safety. This is what could happen. Now, again, you guys aren't surprised by this. One, because you're very, very smart. And two, you watch the Undivided podcast, which actually those first two things might be connected. Maybe that's why you're just so smart and in tune to what's going on. Because we told you, in fact, we broke the news before Christmas, when we got our hands on a leaked memo from the Democratic Party that showed exactly what their playbook is going to be. And that's why we're not surprised by this, right? In this leaked memo that happened mid-December, they said that their winning narrative, they were going to rely on the same thing that helped them defeat the initiative to repeal the capital gains tax in November. They said their narrative is simple. We're going to fund good stuff like education and early learning by making the wealthy few pay what they owe. So that is the winning narrative that they used in November to defeat the initiatives that they said they were going to use in mid-December to try to sell you guys on increased taxes. And that's the narrative in the playbook that they're pushing to the public right now. And I also want to remind you, just so we know the language that they're going to use, because they use it in this website where they talk about, hey, we can't cut things that save lives. We can just make wealthy people pay their fair share. Remember what was leaked out? The best ways to talk taxes, the do say and don't say. Do focus on the proposed solutions and how it will make people's lives better. Don't focus on the budget hole. Yeah, definitely don't do that, because if you're focusing on the budget hole, then you're focusing on how Democrats have misspent funds. And then this one, be specific about the villain. Talk about the wealthy few and those who wrote our flawed tax code nearly 100 years ago, literally saying, this is the person, these are the people we're going to villainize. Be specific about the villain. And that's what they're doing. They're saying, we want to pay for all this critical stuff that saves lives. And who's going to pay for it? The villain. The rich people are going to pay for it, which, of course, we know is disingenuous, because they're also pushing proposed tax increases on regular people like property owners. Nicole, can you go back one slide to the winning narrative? You know something I never really noticed in there when we first talked about this? Fund good stuff like education and early learning. So are you funding bad stuff? I guess, because we know that they're funding an entity that hosts adult jack-off sessions. So yeah, but it's like they're telling on themselves, fund the good stuff. What's the bad stuff? Because yeah. Let's cut that.
All the stuff they sneak in.
Yeah, all yeah. The stuff that they sneak in.
Focus on the stuff they care about, because all this other stuff we're funding, they don't care about.
Right, 100%. And there was a Republican media availability this morning at 9 a.m. And I thought Representative Chris Corey did a really good job of explaining, even if all those things have to be cut, right? The fear-mongering, the sob story of, oh my gosh, we'll have to cut from public safety, we'll have to cut from education, we'll have to cut from healthcare, all the kids with cancer and the people with developmental disabilities, we'll have to cut. Even if that's true, which it's not, even if it's true, as Representative Chris Corey points out, who would you blame for that, right? Who did that? Who put us in a budget deficit? Could it be the party that has had complete control in Olympia for the last 15 years and control in the governor's office for the last 40 years? Here's Rep. Chris Corey.
In the last three bienniums, we have overspent our revenues by $1.9 billion, $2.6 billion, and $4.1 billion in the last 6 years. That's almost $9 billion alone in spending more than we took in. And so now they're claiming we have this big deficit. It's really just a masquerade of their reckless spending and financial irresponsibility. There's no other way to put it. We've been warning them for years. that you cannot continue to spend more money than you take in. You cannot spend more, one-time monies. A great example of that is when they raided $4 billion out of our state's rainy day savings account and spent it on ongoing costs. This is the natural result of that. Fiscal irresponsibility has consequences, and you're yielding this result. And now what are they doing? They're threatening people. Well, if you don't do this, we're going to have all these drastic cuts that are going to impact your life. It's ridiculous. What they should be doing is saying, we still have revenue growth, which we do. We're just not going to do a bunch of new spending.
Easy, right? And again, you can't argue with that logic. Democrats have had a trifecta in Olympia for much of the last 15 years and really much of the last 25 years, where they control the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, and therefore they control the budget and the spending. They've had the governor's office for 40 years. So if you're going to blame someone for putting our state, despite record revenue, despite the fact our state has been doing fantastic economically, despite the fact in 2019 we had so much money, Republicans were begging them, hey, let's put some of it away. We're in such a good situation. Let's save some money for a rainy day like any good budget-conscious person would do. So despite all of that, if we're in a budget hole now, whose fault is it? If we have to cut those things that they're now saying are so scary we might have to cut, whose fault would that be? If you're upset that they'd have to take money from education, if you're upset that they'd have to take money from public safety and corrections, if you're upset that they'd have to take money from people with developmental disabilities, who should you be upset with? You can't be upset with the Republicans. And if you believe that narrative that they're spinning in their new website, there's a very significant budget deficit due to inflation, growing needs, and slowing revenue growth. If you believe that, I don't know how to wake you up. It's very clear. And even, by the way, even some sane Democrats have admitted as much. What did Bob Ferguson say in his inaugural address when he was sworn into office? We need to be realistic about how we got here. Even he is willing to acknowledge that the spending has been absolutely out of control. But Democrats are so used to the media not questioning them, and as a result, the populace not being properly informed, that they actually do believe that they can push this stuff out there, and maybe they're right to believe it. I'll have to look at the news reports today and see how the rest of the media, the legacy media, is covering this issue, because if you're not going to say that the primary issue here is out-of-control spending, then I don't know how we move on from here. Now, thankfully, I mentioned Bob Ferguson. Thankfully, Bob Ferguson has it all figured out. He, and I expect a breaking news conference at any moment for Bob Ferguson to let us all know that he's figured it out, that he has figured out how to close our state's $14 billion budget gap. Just don't replace the carpet in the governor's office. Oh, yes. In the middle of all of this wheeling and dealing, fear-mongering, hand-wringing, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Bob Ferguson would like you to know that he just saved us $70,000 by canceling an order placed last year to replace the carpet in the governor's office. Gosh, that guy, such a good person, good steward of our tax dollars. He says that's just one example of how thorough my team has been in scouring state spending. This work is critical in the face of the biggest budget deficit in state history. Thank you, Bob. You know, I was wrong about you. Every bad thing I ever said about you, I was totally wrong. And as I said to Bob Ferguson, okay, as long as you're looking to slash spending, how about we cut the Department of Equity? There's a bill to do that. How about we eliminate the Department of Equity? That would save us not $70,000, that would save us $19 million. How about we don't provide legal assistance to the tune of $14 million to people who are in our state illegally, already sucking off the system? How about we cut the money that's going to the Pan Arrows Foundation so they can provide event space for adult men to gather around in a circle for literally, God, that phrase I always use actually does apply, for literally a circle jerk. How about we cut that money? How about we cut the now $50 million or so, a story we're going to lead the show with tomorrow, that's being proposed to go to the Washington Education Association? We know they've already gotten $10 million. How about we stop funding unions that have more than enough money that then turn around and give that money to Democrat political candidates like yourself, Huh, Bob Ferguson? You got money from the Washington Education Association. They supported your campaign. How about we stop giving them taxpayer funds? How about we stop funding bicycle clubs to the tune of $10 million? There are endless things. When you go through the budget, it's interesting because Democrats, you know, they posted, Nicole, can you go back to that six-pack of things that they say we might have to cut? You know, they pull out all these horrifying things because this tactic has worked for them so many times, right? Healthcare, developmental disabilities, behavioral health, higher education, corrections, early learning. So they rely on all that, but they actually link in the article to basically every line, major line item on the state budget. And they know that people aren't going to click on that and go through, God, it was like 200 pages. People aren't going to do that and actually look at all the many, many things like the legal aid for illegal immigrants that we could cut instead of making cuts to early learning, to behavioral health, to corrections, to healthcare. But they know that people, unfortunately, are going to look at that handy little graphic they put forth and be like, oh, that doesn't sound good. Yeah, maybe we should increase taxes. Maybe we should tax businesses out of Washington state. Maybe we should pass a wealth tax. Maybe we should do all those things. And people won't click on the document and look at the hundreds, if not thousands, of line items that we could very easily eliminate from the state budget that have really no bearing on Washingtonians and only go to pad the pockets of their cronies and their allies and fund programs that align with them ideologically. You give me, I will volunteer my services. Call me Elon Musk. You give me 1 week in Olympia for the Democrats, free of charge. I will happily come down there and help you find cost savings so you don't have to cut any of these things that you're saying would put lives at risk. I'm happy to do that. So what's going to happen now is they're going to start making the push based on these things and the fear-mongering tactics. I just want you to be prepared for it, for why they have to increase your taxes. Because they want you to be on board, right? They want you to beg them to increase taxes. So all the taxes we've discussed on this show already, they're still on the table. Taxing worldwide wealth, where the really rich people will just take all their assets out of state and they won't contribute to our economy at all. Making the Seattle's jumpstart tax, so the tax on high-paying jobs that led Amazon to move jobs out of Seattle to Bellevue, pushing that statewide, which will absolutely devastate our economy. No job creator is going to want to come here. And the job creators that are here are going to take their jobs somewhere else. That's still on the table. Increasing your property taxes, giving counties the ability to do that, that's something that's still on the table. Firearm tax, 11% tax on firearms and ammo, that's a no-brainer. They're, of course, going to do that. Even Bob Ferguson isn't going to stand in the way of that one. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So all the bad taxes that we've talked about on the show, still on the table, and this is how they're going to sell them. Sad sob story. See through it. Encourage your friends and family to see through it as well. All right. So maybe some little good news here. I'm really hard on Democrats. So let's be nice to a Democrat, shall we? So we've talked a lot about one of the worst bills still under consideration in Olympia. It's Senate Bill 5382. It's been dubbed the initiative killer. And this is what it's designed to do. It's designed to thwart the initiative process because Democrats are so drunk on power that they're looking for any way at all to stop people from pushing back against that power and to eliminate checks on that power. So they want to make the initiative process too cumbersome, too cost inefficient to be able to do. And they did that. Again, that's exactly what Senate Bill 5382 is designed to do. It is designed so it adds requirements for signature gatherers. And it also adds requirements and hoops for the Secretary of State's office to validate those signatures that come in for initiatives. And the reason they did this, make no mistake, no political party would amend an aspect of our democratic process unless it was advantageous for them. Republicans wouldn't do it. Democrats wouldn't do it either. You would not change an aspect of our voting system, which this is, you know, part of that. You're voting with your signature, essentially. If it were detrimental to your political party, right? We agree on that. So Republicans, for instance, you know, if we had a vote in person system, if we were still walking in and voting and stuff, Republicans wouldn't be pushing a vote by mail system. Republicans wouldn't be pushing, for instance, a ranked choice voting system, which tends to benefit more progressive candidates. You're just not going to do that. So the only reason the Democrats are pushing Senate Bill 5382 is because they see it as being advantageous to them. Why? Well, because most people who are running initiatives are conservatives. Because conservatives and Republicans are the party out of power. So one of the only ways they have to put a check on policies they don't agree with is through the initiative process. This is just common sense stuff. So Democrats aren't going to do anything to the initiative process that's going to make it easier, right? So they want to make it more difficult. And then they want to act simultaneously like, oh, we're not making it more difficult at all. No, we don't have bad intentions in doing this. We just want to put some reasonable safeguards in place to make sure people aren't signing the initiatives that shouldn't be, etc. Well, Steve Hobbs, the Democratic Secretary of State, just called them on their bullshit. So you don't have to take it from me. You don't have to take it from someone who's a big fan of the initiative process. You don't have to take it from Let's Go Washington. You don't have to take it from Republicans or conservatives. You can take it from the Democratic Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs, who testified against Senate Bill 5382 in committee yesterday and had this to say.
This bill is not needed, and it's just trying to fix a problem that doesn't really exist. Just so everyone knows, the VoteWall system is very good. It communicates with other databases. It communicates with Social Security. When we hear about deaths that happen and when people change addresses, we update it pretty quickly. That's why the 1.2 million is in here, because now it's asking us to check these addresses. Now remember, we'll see the signature and we can match it with the database. We'll know exactly if you're a registered voter or not. Additionally, what we don't see in here is the cost of lawsuits that will happen when you have somebody, let's say, an overseas voter. When I served in the military, I had a Armed Forces post office. If they put that on there, it invalidates them. If you have a college student, maybe you have a senior citizen that forgot their address and put a P.O. box, it would invalidate them as well. This bill tries to get at a lawsuit that occurred where we prevailed, and it doesn't matter if this bill passes, because the underlying constitution of the state of Washington says you just have to be a Washington voter. And so I would ask you not to move this bill forward. And if you are going to do the $1.2 million, I would love it if you put in my election security and civic engagement programs, because Governor Inslee's budget invalidated both those programs. Thank you. I'll take any questions that you might have.
Boom goes the dynamite. I love that so much. I give all the credit in the world to Secretary of State Steve Hobbs for having the moral consistency and moral clarity that almost every single member of the Democratic constituents or the Democratic membership in the House and Senate just obviously don't have. And it's shocking because, you know, they want to scream, you're a threat to democracy, you're a threat to democracy, Republicans, Donald Trump and all this stuff, while they continuously undermine democracy in our state and undermine the ability of the citizens of this state to put a check on their power. And again, there's no other, and he called them out for every single element. The bill's not even necessary. You know, one of the elements of the bill says that if you sign a petition, for instance, and let's say you move, because the initiative process can go on for months. Let's say you're living somewhere, you sign it, you put your address, and then you move. They want to invalidate that. So, which doesn't make sense. And as Steve Hobbs said, that's unconstitutional. It just says that you have to be a voter. So you can still be a lawful voter. You just live somewhere else in the state of Washington. And so I give him all the credit in the world for calling them out. And, you know, when I hear what he says and so plainly and how he lays it out, and then I want to play you a clip from Senator Jamie Peterson, the Democratic leader in the state Senate. They had a media availability last week where they were questioned about this initiative killer bill. How sanctimonious. Listen to Senator Jamie Peterson and his utter sanctimony when he's talking about, oh, what's the big deal?
The basic reform that it proposes is that you would actually match up a signature with the address of a registered voter. Wow, that does not seem like a big leap.
What an ass. Did you see his facial expression there? Okay, hold on. Watch his facial expression.
Wow, that does not seem like a big leap.
Oh my God. Like, literally go to hell. I mean, what an ass. Oh, it's not a big leap. Okay, voter ID. You know, all the ways that Republicans have tried to secure elections and eliminate potential for election fraud that they just scoff at. And now he's sitting there saying, oh my God, we have to match the address to a registered voter. That doesn't seem like a big deal. Okay, why is anything else along election security a big deal then? Why is that such a big deal? I mean, it's so disingenuous. And I just leave myself wondering, who buys that? Who believes that? Like, can't we have a few more politicians like Steve Hobbs who'll just call balls and strikes and be morally consistent on things? There is no motivation for this bill other than to make it more difficult for a group like Let's Go Washington to be successful. And it came after Brian Haywood was able to qualify an initiative to protect natural gas in less than a month and a half. And he got more than 500,000 signatures in less than a month and a half because they came up with this handy mailing system. He sends you the forms, you send it back, and they were able to gather them really quickly and at a lower cost than initiatives have ever been run. So Democrats saw that. They realized, oh my God, they're going to be able to run an initiative on anything. So what can we do to stop that from happening? They should be ashamed of themselves, but they're not. I mean, all of these people, Senator Jamie Peterson's on my list. Representative Roger Goodman after yesterday is on my list. We have to get them out of office. I mean, what a slap in the face to the voters of this state for them to try to undermine and take away and act like, oh, it's no big deal. The last remaining ability we have to put a check on the party in power. It's outrageous stuff. I hope there are some Democrats who listen to Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, who doesn't have a partisan motivation here clearly, and who knows better than anyone else that this is unconstitutional, it will disenfranchise voters, and it's completely unnecessary. Wild stuff. Good for you, Steve Hobbs. All right. Our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, and catch a new episode of Doge Watch coming out tonight with Zach Abraham. They are having a first 100 days live webinar coming up on March 20th, 3:30 p.m., totally free to register. So in it, he's going to talk about the rapid changes in the first 100 days of the Trump administration and how it could impact your retirement portfolio. He's also going to do a long-term outlook for 2025, what's happening this year, some of the economic policies from the Trump administration. I know they're looking to vote today on renewing some tax cuts, etc. And they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So run your retirement portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. Again, the first 100 days live webinar Thursday, March 20th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Sign up now. No obligation whatsoever. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right. Finally, some good news for landlords in the state of Washington amid all this sea of bad news. So remember the pandemic? You remember the pandemic? Yes. Yes, I do.
Oh, very well.
And all of the crazy, you know, eviction moratoriums, everything happening that made it nearly impossible for landlords to get anyone out of their units, regardless of the reason. And that was always my issue with, you know, the eviction moratorium. I can understand, I could have understood it a little bit, right? If it was like, hey, if you lost your job because of the pandemic, then we're going to give you a little bit of leeway where you can't just be thrown out on the streets. This is obviously an insane situation. But that wasn't what it was. It was like all consuming, this blanket thing. It didn't matter if you'd lost your job. You had no, you didn't even have to show proof that you had any financial impact or strain whatsoever from the pandemic. And you had people who took advantage of it. And they live in places for a year, not paying rent. And then at the end of the year, they have this back rent that they're not able to pay, and you still can't get them out of there. And they didn't even have to prove, by the way, that it was like a financial reason for a landlord not to be able to evict someone. You could have someone in there who's literally running a crack house or a whorehouse, and you couldn't evict them because of the pandemic. It was just crazy stuff. So a small win for landlords, this is from MyNorthwest.com. Washington Supreme Court hands landlords major victory. They call it a major victory. I call it a small win considering the sea of bad things they're under after CARES Act challenge. And so essentially there was a lawsuit over this that said the way this was applied was way too broad. And you didn't require any sort of proof that it's financial or whatever it is. And so the Washington State Supreme Court has sided with landlords and said, yeah, that was applied too broadly. If you had someone running a crack house, for instance, and you couldn't evict them because of the CARES Act and the pandemic, well, that doesn't make any sense. And so a little glimpse of sanity from the Washington State Supreme Court and a little bit of hope for landlords that maybe reason is making a comeback. I don't know. So Andrew Barkus, who's a state representative, he also happens to be a landlord, joins us not only to react to that state Supreme Court ruling, but also to talk about some shady business that's happening in Olympia. Representative Barkus, welcome back to Undivided.
It's great to be here once again with you, Brandy. Always good to have a discussion about all the things happening here in Olympia and beyond. So good to see you.
we'll get to some depressing things on housing, which is per the usual, but also the state Supreme Court making a ruling that helps landlords. Color me shocked.
You know, this is a big case, and yes, and I think I can't emphasize enough that in today's environment, especially in the legislature with all the bad stuff and the fact that we're not fixing these, that the Supreme Court recognized that there was an error within the context of the CARES Act with regards to notice and the ability to evict somebody. You know, we had the eviction moratorium for a long period of time, and I was always concerned that I said that moratorium is going to turn into policy or legislation, which in fact it did over the course of time. And in my opinion, and obviously many that why the lawsuit was brought, is that it was being utilized to allow tenants to stay in and not work within the confines of the eviction system that we have, as complicated as it is in Washington state.
Yeah, and as we were describing, it makes sense. I mean, this really is, should have been an easy decision, and hopefully it was an easy decision for them to reach, because clearly the issue they were trying to get at was the economic hardships brought about by COVID. Yeah. So to say that, okay, yeah, but across the board, even if you have someone, for instance, violating the conditions of their lease by being engaged in criminal activity, like they're using the place for a meth house or a crack house, like that's not the kind of thing that the CARES Act was meant to protect. So I'm glad they could get this one right, at least. So I want to talk about some shady stuff that's going on. I guess we'll characterize it as shady. To me, there's already been a lot of this happening. We discussed on the show, for instance, a certain state representative who, you know, they do a rent control hearing scheduled the very first day of the session. She gets to vote for the rent control bill. Next day is, you know, sworn in as a state senator, gets to do the hearing on the state Senate side. And it's like, all that seems timed, interestingly. I get a call from your staff last week. There was a very hastily convened housing committee meeting that Republicans opted not to attend. Describe to me what happened.
Well, last week was policy cutoff in the House of Representatives. Our last committee, housing committee hearing schedule was Thursday, the 8 to 10 slot. There were four bills that were slated for executive session or moving out of committee. And we have a 2-hour slot. And then, you know, we have to conduct that business by the end of that 2 hours. If it gets done, you get them all out or not. But that's the deadline for the policy cutoff. So there was four bills, one of which, House Bill 1079, had to do with limiting the ability for people to own more than 200 manufactured homes or 5 mobile home parks. Now, the premise around this is trying to prevent big corporations coming in and buying these mobile home parks. And so they're phrasing it as supply and affordability. But really, it's about limiting property rights, the ability for people to own property. We just couldn't stand that. We had 10 amendments, so, you know, it was going to take a while for that bill to get through. We started the committee, we broke for caucus, we came back, and he changed the order, and he brought that bill first, and we went to work, putting forth our amendments. Now, during that, he kept saying, hey, we don't have time, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off, and he started cutting off debate. Rep. Defoe, myself, Rep. Connors, many times they just said, hey, we don't have time for this, and we were bringing forth some very substantive amendments. Long story short, we got through that bill, one other bill, but two did not get through to the caucus. They were extremely upset, to be nice about it, like we kicked the hornet's nest a little bit. But you know what? We did our job. And when it was all said and done, only two bills moved out. He banged the gavel, said, that's done. We're done with the hearing. And that concludes our business of the Housing Committee. And we're sorry, but two bills didn't get through. Well, lo and behold, around 2:30 in the afternoon, we get this notification that we're going to have another Housing Committee at 6 p.m. to move one more bill. Unprecedented, Brandy. We've never done that, not my 9 years. I've asked long-term members here. They said, nope, never seen that during cutoff week. So people should be concerned that, you know, we've already seen this setup of the rules that we're about to see next week when we go on the floor. To see this in committee is a whole nother level, Brandy. I haven't seen this before. And, you know, it's almost as if you don't really need us. You know, just you're kind of an inconvenience. We want to push our policy through. You're kind of an inconvenience. Don't really want to hear about from you, but the people want to hear from us. We have the right to do that. We're representing a lot of people. And so that's why people should care. The other thing is having this second meeting that evening, again, unprecedented. So now we're going to set this precedent. So do we really have a cutoff time? Do we really have to worry about it? So many, many levels. I mean, if you're watching what's happening in the legislature, and you've been doing a great job of getting that message out, because we're getting the feedback by people signing in on bills, by letting their voices be heard, you know, you've got to pay attention to what's happening here. And especially next week, when we hit the floor, usually a lot of people don't pay attention when we're on the floor for all these long hours and nights. You pay attention how they're going to process these bills coming through. And I guarantee you, we're not done with the fight. We're going to fight tooth and nail on this, on the bad policies. They're going to do everything they can to stop us from doing that.
Well, and it also just shows, I think, if Democrats want to do something, they can do it and they will do it. You know, if they need to change the rules to do it, they'll do it. If they need to do something unprecedented and call a meeting at 6 p.m., they'll do it. And one of the things that people should watch for, to your point, on the House floor with this big rule change that they can have a simple majority to end debate, you know, they've said, oh, don't worry, we'll only use it in extreme cases. I don't think that's true. I think we're going to see it used very quickly and very frequently. I hope that's not the case, but I doubt it. If there's still a bill, you know, we had a policy cutoff, for instance, there's still, you know, fiscal issues going on. If there is one bill, Representative Bark, is on the housing front that you're most concerned about as the session progresses, what is it?
Well, of course, rent control. I mean, it's still moving through the House and the Senate. We'll see it. I'm kind of surprised they didn't sneak it in before we went to floor action. It's now setting up that, I mean, if they're wise, they will do it early in floor action, not towards the end. But again, I don't think, here again is that arrogance, right? We'll do it whenever we want because they can put as many amendments. We'll just call them dilatory and we'll just cut their debate off. So we can't use the clock in the same way that we would do to stop bad policy. And this session, man, there's a plethora of bad policy. So I'm very concerned about that. I'm concerned about a lot of the other bills that we've seen, not only housing, but public safety, you know, the Parents' Bill of Rights, all the tax bills that are coming. We haven't even, you know, seen those yet. But, you know, I'm more concerned also about the fact that a lot of good bills that were presented that we really should be considering about supply, eviction reform bills, those were never heard. Those were never even considered. So it really draws a magnifying glass onto the agenda that the Democrats, the majority, are putting forth still in the state of Washington, and they're just not getting it. And I mean, that speaks to your point about that, you know, website they put out yesterday. You know, they just don't get it, Brandy.
Yeah, they don't. Well, it's fear-mongering, and I use the phrase gaslighting sometimes, but it truly is. You know, on the budget thing, like we discussed, it's like, okay, let's say that all these worst of the worst things are going to come to fruition because you have to cut all this stuff. Whose fault is that? Anybody?
It's their fault.
Whose fault is that? There's only one party in control. It's mind-boggling.
40 years, Brandy. You know, let's not forget that, right? I mean, they've been essentially in control. The last governor, 16 years. So we've been living underneath this for a long time here in Washington State. And to drag out the old tried and true, you know, grandma's going to lose her care and we're going to close this down. We're going to cut education and the kids are going to starve. I mean, that is the oldest stuff in the book. And it's disingenuous at best, especially, you know, we're just kind of shocked. We kind of laughed. And when I saw that, I forwarded that on to our comms department because I said, look, here they are admitting that they are really, they've done this. I mean, it's golden for us because we just point and go, yeah, we know this. And now you're going to have to make those decisions on making cuts. But more importantly, you always lay out the argument to make all these horrific cuts to justify the revenue, and that's the tax increases. Let's go after the wealthy, let's go after business, let's go after everybody and tax the crud out of it to try to do this. There's no amount of money that they're not willing to bring forth. And you know what was most interesting? When the governor released his budget on his way out the door, right? He leaves this $14 billion pile there. Mm-hmm. And then he increased spending even more moving forward. It is ludicrous. I mean, we've blown through $23 billion in surplus over the last 5, 6, 7 years. Should not be in this position, should not be facing cuts, and we should definitely not be facing tax increases.
Yeah, zero accountability, zero self-awareness. It's wild. Representative Andrew Barkus, we appreciate it.
Brandy, I appreciate you, and stay tuned. More fun stuff coming from under the dome here in Olympia.
No thanks. No thanks. You know what? In fact, we're not covering it anymore. We're done. All right, see you later.
Only happy stories from now on.
Okay, good. Although I did hear you guys save George Washington. George Washington still gonna be on the flag, so thank you for that.
Still gonna be on the flag. Okay. You know, we'll take little victories, right?
Small victories to keep us sane. All right, thanks again.
You bet.
Yeah, that's a good piece of news we didn't share on the show. That bill that would have taken George Washington off the flag because woke something, it died for the session, so that's good. It's the little things that matter the most. But I would have been pissed, honestly, because you know that they would have replaced it with some woke, weird sort of thing to send some sort of message. So George is safe for now.
For now.
For now, but I look forward to them bringing that back up next session, as they will. And they'll bring it up every session until it passes. All right, our weekly housing segment is brought to you by the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Become a member of RHA today, rhawa.org. They are down there fighting the good fight in Olympia, trying to prevent rent control from going through, God forbid. So if you're a small to mid-sized landlord, not only will they help fight for you if you're dealing with some of the nonsense that's been happening in our state around housing policy, but also they're fighting for you in Olympia. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, another kid criminal with a long rap sheet hurts people. It's a story that is more and more common by the day. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, I mean, this is just like clockwork now. We coddle kid criminals and they learn, as kids do, that if there's not consequences for their behavior, they can continue that sort of behavior. And ultimately what happens is they end up hurting people or even killing people. This is a story from Fox 13. Three pedestrians sent to hospital after crash in Seattle's University District. So this is from Fox 13, but from the police report, officers found a car that hit three people in a crosswalk and left the scene. The victims suffered life-threatening injuries. Yeah, so driver plowed down three people in a crosswalk, left them for dead. The male suspect was taken into custody a short time later. According to George Davison, Seattle Police North Precinct Captain, that person was taken into custody regarding another incident this morning. So they literally were arrested over two things, not just plowing through people in the crosswalk. And our friend David Rose, one of the last remaining legacy media people with any common sense whatsoever, sent this out. The 15-year-old who hit three people in a crosswalk was previously convicted of robbery in the second degree, displaying a weapon, theft in the first degree, burglary in the second degree, and stealing a motor vehicle. The sentencing range set by state lawmakers was 15 to 36 weeks for each felony. He said, anyone see a problem? Yeah. I think that was a rhetorical question. Yeah, I see a problem. And this, in fact, was an issue brought up by the King County prosecutor, Lisa Mannion, who, you know, she's fairly progressive. And she was on the news the other day talking about how, you know, it takes five gun-related crimes to really get a juvenile any sort of meaningful time behind jail to correct their behavior, time in jail to correct their behavior, which, by the way, you know who our guest is on Sundays with Subscribers this week? King County prosecutor Lisa Mannion. So we're going to be talking to her about some of these issues. But think about that. 15 years old, robbery, displaying a weapon, theft, which if you're displaying a weapon, that means you illegally have a weapon because 15-year-olds can't have weapons. Robbery, displaying a weapon, theft, burglary, motor vehicle theft. And then what do you think is the natural course of events? I mean, any one of those, the displaying a weapon, robbery, burglary could have resulted in someone getting hurt, right? But you have someone who's spending weeks in a juvie facility for very, very serious adult crimes. And now three people could die over it because they have such a reckless disregard for human life. And they have been taught over and over again that the consequences are minute for dangerous behavior. And so they plow into three people at a crosswalk, drive away. And meanwhile, what's happening in Olympia? You have Democratic lawmakers, including the chair of the House Public Safety Committee, Rep. Roger Goodman, pushing bills today that will make all of this worse, not better. For instance, their bill reducing sentencing enhancements, HB 1178. One of the sentencing enhancements that they're looking to eliminate, not reduce, eliminate, has to do with gang members who recruit juvenile gang members to commit felony crimes on their behalf. So now not only are you not, you know, throwing the book at juvenile gang members, but now they don't even want to throw the book at adult gang members who recruit juvenile gang members to commit some of these exact crimes. Robbery, theft, burglary, stealing motor vehicles. Some of these 15-year-olds, 16, 17 that you hear that are out there committing these crazy crimes and armed with guns and whatever it is, they're doing those as part of gangs where they're being directed what to do by adult gang members who know that the system will take it easier on a juvenile if they commit an armed robbery, if they commit a burglary, if they steal 15 vehicles, they'll be out in a matter of weeks. And you don't think that's what they tell That 15-year-old, 14-year-old, hey, you're going to go do this for the gang. And if you get caught, you're not snitching. Don't say shit. And you're going to serve a couple weeks in juvenile detention. That's it. So go do it. And now, Democratic lawmakers, one of their priorities is to say to those adult gang members who are encouraging and ordering this behavior, eh, don't worry about it. No sentencing enhancements for you. Again, if my goal was to make the public safety crisis worse, would I be doing anything different than what Democrats are doing in Olympia right now? The answer is no. That's the exact playbook I would be following. Hinder the ability of people, law-abiding people, to have guns for self-defense. Push police defunding so that nobody's coming to their defense when they call 911. Push laws taking it easy on criminals. Ease sentencing enhancements. Give judges discretion to let people out of prison early. It's like the, what's the movie where it's like the Purge. We're living in the Purge. It's like nobody's coming to help you. And all the criminals are running rampant. And no one is coming to help you. And then they have the audacity, as we discussed in the top of the show today, to say, oh my gosh, if we can't raise taxes, then public safety is going to suffer. Public safety is already suffering. You did that. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next, including Wisconsin trying to give Washington State a run for its money. First, if you're looking to sell your home this year, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. I mean, absolutely get a few real estate agents. Reach out to them, see what they have to offer, what they think that you can get for your home, how they'd want to price your home. It's really important. I mean, that's one of the biggest things you'll ever do is sell your home. And for a lot of people, they're relying on the money from selling their home to help fund their retirements or whatever it is. So I would never suggest that someone should only go to one person. Absolutely. And Wes wouldn't either. So reach out to a few real estate agents, but I think that you'll be happy with what Wes Jones and his team have to offer. Wes has been doing this for a really long time. And one of the things we hear over and over again from our viewers and listeners who use Wes Jones is honesty and communication. He's going to be there. He's going to help you through the process. And he's going to be honest with you about what he thinks that you can get for your home, what kind of upgrades might need to be made to your home in order to get the best possible price. But the good news is he can help you with all of that every step of the way. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. All right, national news. If you thought birthing persons was bad, if you thought it was bad to be called a birthing person, how about inseminated person? Doesn't that just like give you the gag?
Yeah, a little bit. You don't want to think that deep about it.
You don't. It's real technical. So in Wisconsin, the governor is defending the decision to change in state language and state law the phrase mother to inseminated person, saying it's for insurance reasons. Here's a clip from Fox 11, Wisconsin.
In all my time in and around politics, this is probably the dumbest proposal that I've seen. I think it's incredibly offensive to women, to mothers.
Republican State Senator Andre Jacques is talking about Evers' proposed changes to a section of state law about artificial insemination. Husband, man, mother, and father would be replaced with terms like person, spouse, and inseminated person.
If I called my mother an inseminated person, she'd probably slap me. With good reason.
What the Republicans say is a lie. You know, so, of course, I'm pretty PO'd about that. All we want is to make sure that moms and dads have the legal, things have been taken care of legally so that moms can have a year of service from an OBGYN. End of story.
Is the change needed for something like that?
I've never heard that explanation that has never been presented. And did he actually call them mothers when he said that? Because if he understands the term as easily as you and I do now, there certainly would be no call for him to change it in the statutes.
Evers wants to change other parts of state law as well. One state Republican lawmaker counting at least 30 times mother is replaced with a gender-neutral term, father subbed out more than 120 times.
That's so dumb. I love that Republican lawmaker. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. There cannot be any rational reason or explanation why you would have to call a mother an inseminated person for legal reasons to be able to get access to insurance. No other state, even the crazy states, are doing that. So is Wisconsin on some special island where you have to call a mother an inseminated person there in order for that mother to get care? Because if that's the way your laws are written, then it's a problem with your laws. It's just wild. So it's paternity to parentage, wife or husband to spouse, father to parent, and mother, parent. All, the other recommended change to mother is parent who gave birth to the child. Okay. It's so dumb. It's like you have nothing better to do. That's even worse than Washington. Inseminated person.
Inhuman. Like, dehumanized people.
Yeah, there was also this, we won't talk about tomorrow. I'll just mention it today. It's also in Maryland. They want to, like, put, like, birth control and condoms in bathrooms as young as, like, kindergarten.
And, yeah, elementary school.
Elementary school, just walk-in condoms. That's for the teachers more than anyone. You're going to have teachers and they're like, sweet, free condoms.
Children in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, maybe fourth grade should not even know what a condom is.
No, and then they're just going to blow it up like a balloon and be running around the hallways with it. And then they
don't
also
spend your lunch money on that.
Yeah. What'd you spend your lunch money on? Lip balm. What is a Magnum? Just like, but then they also in Maryland, made it nearly impossible to opt your child out of gender identity lessons in elementary school.
Can't do it.
It's respect.
I would opt my child out of that school real quick.
The state. I would opt my child out of the state of Maryland. It's just wild. But I'm glad sometimes it's nice to know that Washington isn't the only one. Not alone.
But we're in competition. So what are we going to come up with next to top them? That's how I feel. All in competition.
What I'm hoping happens is, so there's this resistance to Trump and the anti-DEI and all this stuff that they're like digging in, right? Let's go even further just to show him you don't control, you don't own us. So I'm hoping that they actually do double, triple down, and then we can have a real chance at sort of flipping the state or bringing it back to sanity.
Pervious of the pervs shows their face. And we can use that when they run again.
The perviest of the pervs. I just want freaky little pervs. Yes, I just want political ads that have a picture of the politician, and it says perv, and it's just a 5-second ad. Perv. you pay to air it like 100 times because it's just 5 seconds long. Perv.
Yeah.
All right. So we don't have a Thursday show this week, and so we won't have Florida Report with Miranda. So we thought we'd fit in a quick Florida story today. So Ron DeSantis, very contrary to our state, where where lawmakers are looking to increase your property taxes threefold per pop, in Florida, Ron DeSantis says, you know what? We shouldn't even have property taxes.
And you know, these property taxes, it's like you buy a home, you buy land. You know, maybe you buy the home outright, but maybe you pay off a mortgage over 30 years. And then, okay, you've paid off the mortgage, you bought the land, you've been taxed many times. It's like, is it your property or not? Just for being on your property, you got to write a check to the government every year. So you're basically paying rent to the government to live on your own property. And the reality is you don't really know how much your home is worth until someone offers you money and is willing to pull the trigger on a sale. That's how a market works. You can say it's worth this much, but if no one's willing to come and offer you that much, then why should you pay taxes on that amount?
100%. I've always thought this about property taxes. You mean we can buy this parcel of land, we can build a house, we can pay for that house over 30 years. We can own the house and the land outright. And we still essentially have to rent the land from the government. And you have some elderly people who they have to sell their homes in Washington state despite the fact that they own the home. Because the property taxes have increased so exponentially, the property taxes are almost more than their first mortgage payments when they bought the house to begin with. And they didn't ever budgeted for that. So look, are we ever going to eliminate property taxes in Washington state? No. I mean, that would be awesome if they do that in Florida. I'm sure my sister would be thrilled about that. But it is this idea of like you are for the rest of your life having to rent property you own from the government. There needs to definitely be property tax reform. I mean, if I were governor, it's one of the first things that I would do, looking at like, okay, if you pay property taxes in Washington state for 15 years, no more property taxes after that, or at least freeze the property tax rate at the rate that it was after you were paying for 15 years. There's so many things that you could do to make it more realistic. And I know that there's some wiggle room for veterans and for elderly people and whatever it is. But if you're paying, especially if you've paid for 30 years and you've paid into the school system and even people who don't have kids or whatever it is, if you've paid in for 30 years, why do you have to keep paying property taxes? Why do you have to keep paying all these increased insane property taxes? Mm-hmm. So there should be some mechanism by which you can say, you know, you've paid your quote unquote, you paid into the system your quote unquote debt or whatever it is, and now you own it and now you're free and clear. I don't get it.
Or there's like a fixed rate at some point, right?
Yeah, at
you
some point.
You can't go over this much value of what you paid for your home or something. I don't know. There's got to be a better way, though, because it does get pretty ridiculous. And yeah, people that their homes are their what they're leaving to their family. Their homes are what they're, you know, that's what they're giving their kids or whatever. And then they end up having to do different things to just pay property taxes, like reverse mortgages, things like that. Just to pay property taxes, like they should be, I don't know. It's just silly. It should be part of your, like that's what most people count on their retirement being, right? You're living off like the value of what you've made your whole life.
Yeah.
And instead, they're just taking more and more and more as they go.
67 Malibu Girl says, my house is paid off and just the taxes and insurance is $730 a month.
Yeah.
So even when you've got through, like you're getting towards retirement, you've paid off your house. It's like, yeah, but you still have to factor in property taxes for a home you own.
Right.
Is utterly insane. I mean, that literally, that's one of the first things that I would do as governor, which we know I'm already contemplating it for 2028.
Okay.
Because there's no good options out there. So at least we could have
nobody's
a good time.
Shown their face.
You know, at least we could have a good time.
Yeah.
But property tax reform, you could do it and we can afford it. Stop paying for all the other nonsense that we've already talked about. And you can give people a break on property taxes after a certain amount of time and at a certain age or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's just insane. And then they won't leave the state and they'll stay here and they'll retire here. And then they can enjoy the state they've lived in forever because it's not pushing them out of the house that they own.
When I was in London, I believe they told us that, I think it was London, but the monarchy, right, owns the property. And so you only own the house. You don't own the property that it's on. And that's really what we have. And we're like, oh, I can't imagine. That's really what we have here. We don't own anything. We have to keep paying to the government to say that we own it, but we don't really own anything because they continue to make us pay.
Yeah, and I know there should be some exceptions. Like if you got Mike and I bought a bunch of land, right? And so I get it that, like, for instance, it's a swath of land that's prone to wildfires. Mm-hmm. Like, if there's a wildfire, the county's going to come in, the state's going to come in, and they're going to help protect our land. Like, I think there are some exceptions to that where it makes sense. But again, if you pay it for 30 years and you're paying it property taxes and into that system and all the things that property taxes benefit, and you've paid taxes into the state of Washington, you know, you've done all these things and you want to retire here and you've worked hard for this home, you shouldn't have to pay property taxes any longer. There are some taxes that should simply sunset and go away. And it's just crazy to me. So, anyway, rant about property taxes. Mm-hmm. Amen, Ron DeSantis. Speaking of insurance, people are saying, oh my God, some people are saying, same here. I own my home, $930 a month between that and insurance. Well, I can help you with the insurance side of things. I can't help you with the property tax side of things. But I've encouraged people to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. As you know, you have to have insurance. And the question is, do you have the right insurance and do you have it at the right price? And First Mark Insurance for free can help you figure that out. We get endless emails from people who've finally taken the First Mark Challenge. The common theme is, I wish I had done it sooner. Eric said that he'd been handling his own auto and homeowners policy for decades. He said, I thought, you know, why work with a middleman? I can work with the insurance companies myself. Then to come to find out, takes the First Mark Challenge. They're now saving him 30% on his auto policy and 70% on his homeowner's policy. He says, I'm not exaggerating. I now tell anyone who's dealing with changes to their insurance to give First Mark a call. I did. I'm truly richer for it. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. Sorry I didn't have a subscriber show poll yesterday. As you know from the show, it was a busy show and I was so distracted laying smackdowns on people, I just forgot about it. And I apologize. But we do have one today. Our subscriber poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. So there's this idea of Doge dividends. We talked about it on Doge Watch last week, where if they save enough money to send out checks to the American taxpayer in the form of a dividend, and do you think it's a good idea or not? So I asked subscribers, how do you prefer Doge cost savings are used? Do you want a refund check? Do you prefer that those savings are used to pay down our bloated, ballooning national debt? Or do you want it to be used just to lower your future tax burden? Like, hey, maybe you don't have to tax us so much in the future because we've cut all of this spending. Nicole, what say you?
Well, I would say the national debt, that's where my, like, you know, my brain goes. But then I also like the idea of refund checks because I think that would gain us some momentum as Republicans if the Republican president right now give people that kind of incentive to vote Republican.
Are you saying us like me? Don't lump me in with
you
the
support
GOP.
The current president who is a Republican.
I just don't like parties. I just think they're all lame and self-serving.
That's where we are, though.
Stupid. Yeah, I mean, I actually think paying down the national debt would ultimately be able to lead us to a place where we could reduce our future tax burdens if we're responsible with it. You're not like paying those, like the payments on debt, the servicing on debt and stuff. So I would say pay down national debt. I mean, that is going to take forever, even if we have massive cost savings through DOGE. I don't like the idea of a refund check just because I look at it as, and Zach and I talked about this on DOGE Watch last week. It's like, okay, what's the responsible thing to do if you get a Christmas bonus? Right? And let's say you have a bunch of debt and credit cards and you get a Christmas bonus. You're not, the responsible thing is not to go out and buy a bunch of shit you don't need. It's to pay off your debt. And so as a country, I think if we're going through this whole cost saving exercise and eliminating, you know, cutting the size of government, and we need to start with the debt.
You're also not as fun, assuming that nobody invests that. So I might invest that better than I think that the country would.
Or, I'm not saying everybody would go out and buy crap with it, right?
Right. But I know what you're saying. You're giving the money back to the us as a whole, as a country. But if you give it back to individuals, like, some will do good and some will not.
Yeah.
But
it's almost this, like, also I've already made amends with that money going to the government. You know, like, I've already lost that money. So what I would like is to not lose as much money in the future. You know what I mean? Sure. And for our kids and future generations, and put the country on a long-term strategic better path forward.
Trajectory.
All right, let me see what you guys think we ought to do. I don't know. I don't know with this one. Oh, wow. Reduce our future tax burden is the most popular response. Oh, no, I lied. It switched. Pay down debt. Renee, so much of our money has been wasted and stolen. We should get some of it back. I would rather they just abolish the IRS, wouldn't we all? Truck driver Ken, that's a tough question. I ended up voting for the refund checks because I remember Dory always used to say we can spend the government's money better than they can. Greg P., by reducing debt, this will prevent the need for some tax increases in the future. Sharon says, the original stated intention was to reduce the deficit of DOGE. So it would be great and unusual to see someone actually do what they said they were going to do. And that was the intent of DOGE, right? Let's see. Why? Pay down debt. So in turn, it will hopefully reduce our future tax burden. And I agree. I think it would do that as well. Pickle Man. I like that. Pickle Man. Unless it's pervy. But if it's just about pickles. Love pickles. I never know with you guys anymore. It depends on the size of the check. Unless it is significant, there's no need to send out token checks. Yeah. Jesse Simmons, if there's a possibility to have some combination of all three, I think it could be a win for everyone. Yeah, I do understand what you were saying, Nicole, with like, though, it would be a nice, tangible, like, we are actually saving you money. Mm-hmm. We are saving you money. Here's the check to prove it. Because they were talking about something like $5,000 for each American taxpayer. Right. Maybe it, because if you continue DOGE, right, and you continue cutting costs and saving money, maybe, as Jesse said, it could be like, let's start everyone off with a check so they know, like, we are actually saving you money, and then future savings pay down the debt or whatever it is. So maybe there's some combination of all of it. So let me see.
I mean, I wish people paid better attention and knew that paying down the debt was going to benefit you in the long run, but people just don't pay that much attention.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, Gabe says, Gabriel, I apologize, over on Locals, why not a combination of all three? There also is the dimension of governmental efficiency gained via DOGE's work. This should spur Congress to actually present a budget rather than deflect scrutiny via continuing resolutions. Yeah, I agree as well. Good answers, everyone. You're all so smart. Okay, comments. Barbara McCowan, they need to cut the pork, not the essential services. Talking about the Washington state budget. They are full of S-I-H-I-T. The Democratic Party has, I almost forgot how to spell that word. Democratic Party has never met a tax they didn't love. I agree. Yeah, they need to cut the pork. So that's what they're doing, is there's all this stuff for them to cut. We've talked about just a little bit of it with DOGE. And what they're immediately going to is, oh my God, we have to cut essential services. And they don't. They don't have to cut essential services, but that's the scary stuff, right? And so they're not going to talk about and be responsible and push all this pork that they could be cutting. Amy Dawson, where is the millions from cannabis sales for starters that was supposed to go toward education these last many years? I get this question all the time.
I know that we had quite a few people say it. That's why I grabbed one. But well, it's supposed to go mostly to education, I believe. And so that when they say they're going to have to cut education,
it's like, you're going to take the cannabis.
Education is very specifically funded in what I know about it. But yeah,
we shouldn't be short, and we're not short on money for education. Yeah. Let me see. B. Lorison, a bill that would have given agriculture a seasonal exemption to the overtime law failed to make it out of committee. We're already losing about 14 farms a month, and why not make it more? Yeah, that's it's so interesting because this bill was debated when it was passed, and farm workers showed up and said, look, if you don't give agriculture a seasonal exemption to the overtime rule, we're going to get fewer hours. And they even said it. And I remember at the time there was a Democratic lawmaker on the committee who was helping
advocate?
They spoke Spanish, so she was
translating
it, into English. And she was mistranslating them, basically suggesting they just didn't understand what they were saying. And she was mistranslating them because their testimony wasn't what Democrats would have expected. You had these Hispanic, like Mexican-speaking farm workers who are like, don't do this, as Democrats are saying, we're doing this for you. And they're like, no, you're not. This is actually going to hurt us. And she got in a lot of trouble for mistranslating what they were saying because it wasn't what they thought. That it was a big scandal at the time. D, is this our Daryl?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Imagine if that money was invested in NVIDIA or just S&P 500. Jeez. Carlene Heath, my dad used to say, just because you still have checks in the checkbook doesn't mean you still have money in the bank. Yeah, that's true. You can't just write a check. There's no money in there. Mm-hmm. You could, but that would be illegal. Papa Woody, $20 super chat. We need an initiative that makes each county or the state have all their needles in the exchange system. Sorry, We need an initiative that makes each county or the state have all their needles in the exchange system, have property of state of Washington. Okay, I get it now. Let me try one more time. We need an initiative that makes each county or the state have all their needles in the exchange system, have property of state of Washington or Bob Ferguson. So if someone gets injured, they can sue them personally. Yeah, I like it. So if you're handing out needles via the needle exchange, mm-hmm. it says property of the state of Washington, so you know that taxpayers subsidized it. And then if the person is found dead with a state of Washington needle in their arm, yes, their family can sue the state of Washington. That's a good idea. It took me a while, but Stacy, I've noticed there are a lot of bills that would allow local taxing authorities to increase their portion of sales tax in order to pay new and enhanced programs that the state legislature wants. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat. With all this evidence, why isn't the WAGOP having town halls to wake up the vote, blue no matter who crew in blue areas? Lazy, controlled opposition. Jack, thank you for the $1.99. Kyle, at the national level, people are losing their minds that things like national parks are losing funding, but they really should blame the Democrats who tied filth to essential services or programs most people support. The same thing could be said about state spending. I'm all for cutting millions of essential services to stop our government from spending a dime on mutual masturbation clubs. Mm-hmm. Yes. And no Democrats have even come out and said, you know what? Yeah, why are we spending money on that? So we're in this big budget deficit, and Bob Ferguson is bragging about not replacing the carpet in his office.
And he says his crew is on it. They're trying to figure out some more cuts.
Wait, just talked about a bunch of them.
Dojois is doing the work for you.
If you can't even acknowledge that, hey, we shouldn't be giving money to this gallery that hosts male J.O. parties, then can we really trust you to actually comb through the budget? Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
I do hope he gets asked. I mean, if he ever talked to the press, right? He hasn't really done a lot of press talking. But if he ever talks to somebody, I hope somebody asks him, are you keeping track of these Dojois posts? And
do you think money should be spent
about
there?
That?
Right. Joanne, me too. Total bullcrap having property taxes. Mine went up another $600 this year because of a school levy. I'm retired. See what I mean?
That's crazy. Ridiculous. $600 for a levy.
Well, when you're on a fixed income, and now for 30 years, look how much in the last 30 years people's property taxes have gone up, right? And so if you're looking at that, you're putting yourself in the poorhouse in retirement, and you're going to have to go back to work over property taxes. That's not right. I mean, that should be a common sense thing. If they really care about the working poor, I mean, and the elderly, and it's like you've done so much in your life and for the state. If you've lived here for 30 years, think about all the taxes that you've paid, from the gas tax, the sales tax, and all of these things. And we don't want to give you a comfortable retirement because we want to tax you to death.
As far as levies, things like that go, we've got to stop them while this ridiculous spending is going on. Stop giving these superintendents insane salaries and spend the funds more appropriately if you want schools to get extras with through these levies. I just think that a lot of them have failed. This one seems to, I don't know where she lives, but it went through. But a lot failed, and more will continue to fail if they keep giving these ridiculous salaries and ridiculous programs like DEI programs and stuff like that, funding. Yeah. So
just wild. All right, good comments per the usual. Nicole, thank you. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, so Congress is debating whether to re-up some Trump-era tax cuts. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal says absolutely not. She's got a good reason for it.
Listen, what I tell people, first of all, is to remember that average Americans got breadcrumbs. They got a couple weeks of groceries in tax cuts, while the wealthiest got the lion's share of that tax scam. And so they get yachts and average Americans get breadcrumbs. Don't settle for that.
Okay. Even if we taxed average Americans nothing, they wouldn't be able to afford a yacht. I would also note the way that she says, oh, all they got, all the tax cuts they got is amounted to 2 weeks of groceries. So you'd take away tax cuts that help them buy 2 weeks of groceries if it means sticking it to the rich? Wow, really sold that one. That has been our closing sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. We've got a ton to get to on the show tomorrow. Again, it'll be our last live show of the week. We'll also be scheduling a live Q&A for subscribers coming up in the coming days. So stay tuned for that. You'll get a notice of that on Patreon Locals Next. If you're not a subscriber already, ask yourself, why? Why am I not a subscriber to Undivided? I watch it or listen to it almost every day. I love the segments. I love the idea of independent media, and I hate the legacy media, so why would I not become a subscriber for $5 a month to Undivided? That's a good question. You should sit and ponder that deeply today. And once you've decided you should be a subscriber, you just go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and you click on support the show for $5. Simple. See you tomorrow.